talking pigskin on NFL. Cause football is really swell. NFL's great and there is no debate. He's gonna talk right now.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Damashek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 123 of the Dave Damashek football program, available as always on iTunes and at NFL.com/Sheck, S-H-E-K. We are just in front of those two title games, and yet I feel like those might not even make the front page of the sports page with all the news that's going down in a crazy, a legitimately crazy sports week. Let's talk about all of it right now in our second podcast of the week with my main man from NFL.com. It's Adam Rank. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, boss. Thanks for having me.
Sure, sure. A pleasure to see you, and I'm glad we're safe and sound here in Studio 66, away from all the cuckoo cheaters and liars out in the world, in the sports world, no less.
Yeah, we're taping this on Wednesday afternoon. Honestly, outside of Black Monday, which happened a couple of weeks ago, this has been one of the weirdest sports days in quite some time. No games of note going on or anything like that.
No, just, indeed. We could go on and on a quieter sports week. We obviously would have no trouble talking about these two compelling title games that await us. Otherwise, we could talk about the battle for L.A. among the two NBA teams is a fine subject. Carmelo Anthony being taped by his own owner. But these are stories that we don't even have time for right now. Yes, we will give you our picks on our final breakdown of the two title games. But let's talk about, like I say, what's been a cuckoo week here. And by the way, hello to the man behind the glass, Black Tie, producing the show today. What's the poop there, Black Tie?
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Good, good. You tweeted out, I noticed, just before we got going here. You asked the Sheck Republican, Rank Amateurs, and the Black Sheep, your fan base, to
I'm not
tweet.
A fan base kind of guy. I don't care.
That's
bases.
Not the issue. Your followers, the followers of Black Tie, are officially now the Black Sheep, and they're all weighing in with questions. You have any good questions, Black Tie? We could have just about opened up the bat phone and just taken calls this whole time, but instead we'll go with 21st century social media and take your questions. What's everybody buzzing about? I think I have a guess.
Well, yeah, first off, I just want to say, you know, last episode this week, the first episode this week, we went double OT. Went
so
an hour and 30 minutes.
And yeah, everybody loved it.
Yeah, just like, remember how popular that game was on Saturday in Mile High?
Well, it was a good game. I'm just saying for
the
this
playoffs,
episode.
The divisional round playoffs were spellbinding, and I felt and Rank agreed that we needed to deliver an equally spellbinding podcast to discuss everything that we saw. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind telling you, immodestly, we delivered. We did it with the help of Brendan Ayabendejo, the linebacker, who's gotten some heat for his tweet about the Patriots having a gimmicky offense, and we kibitzed with him, and we got into some hard-hitting issues with him, too. He's the guy, if you'll remember, at the start of the season, he said that he believes in same-sex marriage, and for whatever reason got a lot of heat about that. We talked about that. He drove to Ray Lewis to his final home game.
Ray Lewis drove him, as he said.
I'm sorry. Ray Lewis drove him. We talked to him. We talked to our pal Daniel Jeremiah, personnel guy, getting all set for the draft, mock draft, asked some questions there. And then we talked about those four glorious games, of course. And there's now a shame report about those divisional playoffs. I didn't think I would be able to muster five worthy shame candidates, but turned out not to be hard at all to do it. Of course, there were four winners, but then again, there were four losers, so it was easy to come up with those. Check that out at NFL.com. And Rank, you have your gridiron breakdown up there as well, so be on the lookout for that good stuff.
Speaking of the gridiron breakdown
and
the last episode.
Yes.
Yep.
Rank's gridiron breakdown today has to do with Peyton Manning versus Homeland.
Yep.
Right.
Who's more overrated?
Yep.
Speaking of.
NFL.com/AdamRank is where you can find that.
Awesome. Speaking of, so Mark Brady, our second boss, we've had Tom Brady on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Brady, our other boss, who actually is a big fan of the show, he listened and he told me that you guys are way too hard on Peyton Manning.
What?
way too hard on Peyton.
What does that mean? We're going to get suspended? Is
I don't
that
know.
Taboo?
I'm just saying.
It's you guys... so crazy. If you say boo about anybody at the NFL that's held up as a superstar, this is the kind of business you get. Wait, so what's his issue? We're too hard on him?
Yeah, too hard on Peyton. I for one agree with him.
You beat me to the punch. What a shocker. Wait a second. Black tie agreed with the man? He agreed with the boss?
Of course he would.
Shocking, black tie.
What?
Where's your spine?
Where's your dignity?
Anytime you present numbers, and you know what? There's no bias or anything with that. The fact that Peyton Manning is 9-11 in playoff games, that he's got a lot of one and dones. The fact that he threw an interception in the double overtime that led to the Ravens field goal. Those are undisputable. You can't look at that and say, you know what, you're being too hard on him. And that was the whole reason why I decided to go again or try to put Peyton Manning up against Homeland, is because if you say anything bad about either thing, whether it's Manning or that TV show, everybody loses their mind. It used to be a thing like you couldn't talk about politics or religion. Now it's Peyton Manning or Homeland.
Agreed. As you know, we've spoken about this, Rank. Homeland to me went off the rails in like the last 2-3 episodes. Mm. But Peyton Manning, for crying out loud, like that, I can't defend that throw. But the notion of him being one and done. He's always had teams. He had a lot of teams that have had that first round bye. So that should count in his favor. That's almost like a win, is it not?
Listen,
I should count as a win. Wow, okay.
I've gotten a lot of the abuse I've gotten on Twitter and elsewhere from Peyton Manning defenders. And where you're going is a semi-legitimate point, which is people say, "Well, you're a defender of Ben Roethlisberger. You never besmirch his name." And I say that's absurd. Of course, I have and have done it multiple times. I've said, you know, I've talked about his character off the field and practically speaking in terms of a football player. I talked about the way he finished off this season, and I said it's his fault. It's a quarterback league. It's his fault. I've always held him up as the guy who I want with one game on the line. He didn't deliver with one game on the line, and so I took him to task. Yes, there is something valid about saying, hey, Peyton Manning at least gets his team to the playoffs. Roethlisberger went 8-8. With that team, which isn't a complete garbage team, they didn't make the playoffs. Peyton Manning did. Fine. On the other hand, the other side of that coin is, as I always say, if you are the main man, especially when you're Peyton Manning, and you take the stance that no one else in practice gets to take a snap, it's me, it's my team, it's on some level it's narcissistic, it's making you the entire what's going to happen with the team when you couch it that way, when you're the coach on the field, as he's always held up to be, then you must coach your team to victory when it counts most. He doesn't do it. He deserves everything he gets. All right. That is a story, though, that's 3 or 4 days old now already, Black Tie. Let's get to the craziness. We have Chip Kelly in Philadelphia. I can't believe it's taken us 5 minutes or more on this podcast to get to that.
All right, guys. Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk about Chip Kelly. I got a tweet now from Hobo Showdown. Asking about Chip Kelly. What does this mean for Michael Vick?
Well, it's funny. We had that question today at NFL.com. We had to respond to that in a so-called instant debate about with Chip Kelly and Mark Trestman goes to the Bears. What coach do you think is now positioned to succeed in 2013 among all these new hires? I follow it up with that question, which is, where's Mike Vick going? Because I assume, on one hand, that Chip Kelly can extol the virtues of his offense for a guy who runs around a little bit like Mike Vick does. Also, I think I think in the last year or so, I've said this a couple of times in a couple of different places, the Eagles, the would-be dynasty, a lot of people got the slings and arrows there. Andy Reid, Mike Vick, the defense, Nnamdi specifically, the injuries on the offensive line. Somehow, the two guys who never got any blame, DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin, they are overrated. However, if there is any offense that it would seem is tailor-made for their two-dimensional skills and what the third dimension that they lack is toughness, I don't mean to say they don't take a beating out there. They have, obviously, we've seen them play and take a beating, but they're not physical type of receivers. They're smallish kind of guys. I think this offense is perfect for them. I think Chip Kelly can sell Mike Vick on that. Then again, on the other hand, much in the same way that John Travolta, whose career was flagging when Pulp Fiction is being made, Quentin Tarantino takes him off the scrap heap, salvages his career. Same can be said for what Andy Reid did for Mike Vick. So if there's any sort of loyalty, and for that matter, I don't know that Andy Reid wants Mike Vick coming with him to KC. But let's say he does. Does Mike Vick go there? That's what'll determine it. I think the Chiefs are loaded. You know, I know we agree on that, Rank, that the Chiefs are a good team minus at the quarterback spot. And then the Eagles probably, for continuity's sake, would like to have a guy like Mike Vick. And definitely Nick Foles doesn't seem to fit an offense run by Chip Kelly the way he likes to do things.
But Mike Vick can't stay healthy, and that's a big thing that you got to consider, is that in any offense, he hasn't been able to go out and stay healthy ever since he's returned.
True enough.
Now you're going to go out and run around a little bit more and expect him. It just doesn't work. You got to have the right quarterback, the right players for that. And when you think of somebody like Chip Kelly, it's hard not to think of Steve Spurrier, how he came and he bought the fun and gun offense to Washington. Yeah. And it looked fun. Like, for a couple of weeks, he was out there setting the NFL on fire. And everybody's like, oh, my gosh, he's like revolutionized. Am I saying that right? Yes, revolutionized the way the NFL played. And then they had that Monday night game, and I cannot remember who they played, but they got absolutely whipped on them. You know what? It might have even been the Eagles with Andy Reid. They went out and got whipped on Monday Night Football. Steve Spurrier makes the face, that whole, like, what am I doing here type of face, and then that's what I can see.
Yeah, but you knew that early on that was going to be a bad move for Spurrier when he said, I'm not going to be like these other coaches. I'm going to be 9 to 5 or whatever he said. I'm not going to be sleeping on any couches late at night. You knew that he knew it was a mistake. How about guys of more recent vintage making the jump from college to pros? Obviously, Pete Carroll has done it with a little bit of success.
But he was an NFL coach before. He had been an NFL head coach twice.
Fair point.
A lot of these guys, even Nick Saban, if you want to count him as having any success or not, he was still an NFL assistant at some point. If you look at Chip Kelly's resume, it's not as impressive as you would think
it is.
Well,
it's definitely not a long resume. That's the thing. He really doesn't take off until the last couple of years at Oregon.
Not until
he's 49. To look at him, I would think, oh, he's probably what, 40-ish? No, he's a little bit older for a guy who doesn't have as big a track record. But then again, so what? So maybe he's landed on some offensive plan never before seen that is ready to revolutionize the sport, as our colleague Akbar Bajabiamila contends, versus another colleague, Heath Evans, who contends that this is going to be an abject bust.
Yeah, I just look at it, you know, he started at Columbia, went to New Hampshire, John Hopkins.
All right, so these don't really count. These are training ground for him.
That's where he was in New Hampshire, and then he went to Oregon.
And then when
Bilotti retires or becomes the athletic director, he becomes the head coach. Thought he was a little bit overmatched at first. You know, they lost to Boise State, LeGarrette Blount that game. And I thought, you know what, Chip Kelly might not last the season. But now he's going to be in a situation where he had a lot of advantages at Oregon. He had Phil Knight backing him. They were in the Pac-12, which hasn't been great. But you look at some games, and this is a point that Heath Evans made, where you pointed out that game against Stanford. They looked bad. They got out-coached. They got out-muscled. And when you take a real smash-mouth approach to what you're going up against at Oregon, when you have the athletes to stand there and go toe-to-toe with them, he doesn't win. He didn't beat Auburn a couple of years ago. He didn't beat Stanford this year.
Yeah, I hear you. But you talk about circumstances being different. At Oregon, it's probably hard to lure the big bodies and where they come from and, you know, that sort of.
You're pulling from California, though.
I guess but doesn't it feel like at the NFL level that the offensive linemen, while I know that they're all 300-pound behemoth type of guys, at least there's not going to be a huge size differential. He's going to have the same size bodies. At Oregon, in terms of recruiting, he's behind the eight ball when he goes up against a team like USC and a team that has philosophically built itself to be ground and pound like Stanford has over the last.
But you were just saying they don't have physical receivers. They don't have a physical team. They don't have
a lot
of draft picks.
Don't use my words against me, Rank. I think that if I were an Eagles fan, I'd be fairly excited about this after a team. You know, what's the worst thing that can happen if you're an Eagles fan? That team that was stacked, this all-star team, the last 2 years, that 2 years in a row, most people, including me, got duped into thinking, oh, yeah, this team will be successful. They're a playoff team. They didn't go to the playoffs. How much worse can it be? So I think it feels inspired. It feels outside the box. And good for them to convince him on this, even though he's a liar, one of many liars this week. Mm-hmm. On some level, we can evaluate whose lie was the worst. What a week of lies for the world of sports between Lance Armstrong, Chip Kelly being the latest among a long line of college coaches saying, nope, I'm here to stay. Oh, wait. Actually, I am going to leave. Sorry, kids.
Is Oregon on probation?
Here. Listen. Talk about, you know, the Pete Carroll thing. He goes to Seattle. You'd have to be naive to not think that that weighed into his decision when he dumped USC when those probation charges were about to come down on him. Same thing at Oregon. That's really why he's leaving. He's reading the tea leaves. I don't know if that's the sole reason. I'm sure he got a lot of money. I'm sure the Eagles sweetened the offer that they made to him a fortnight ago, but I'm sure it doesn't hurt either that he's starting to see, oh, yeah, we're going down. Something bad's going to happen to this program. I may as well ditch now. And then, of course, the other big lie that we're talking about is Manti Te'o, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure. I'd be stunned if the Czech Republic / Ring Amateurs don't have a question or two about that.
Oh, they
that
do.
One. I'm not
before,
so, okay.
Before we do that, though, you know who could end up being the big if this would actually happen this way, who could actually end up being a big winner is USC. Because let's say that Chip Kelly goes to the NFL and it doesn't work out, and it's a Bobby Petrino type of situation. Mm-hmm. Halfway through the season, he realizes, you know what? This isn't working out. This is a bad fit. I need to get back to the college game. USC, who as of right now is sticking with Lane Kiffin, goes through another disastrous season next year. And they go, you know what? Lane Kiffin's out. Chip Kelly, please come back to college.
What a horrible mistake, by the way, they've made there at USC. Now that you've opened up that can of worms, I feel like it's insane. Monty Kiffin, all the USC fans were in LA, so we have heard a fair amount of the noise locally here when people aren't, wringing their hands over their beloved Lakers not being in the playoffs, in the playoff picture right now. They are talking about USC. It's crazy that they haven't kicked Lane Kiffin to the curb. That's another story that broke this week, is that apparently after the Sun Bowl, 10 or 15 of the players got into a fight. They were bad. The young guys were bad-mouthing Matt Barkley, so the seniors all got into a fight. Watching, standing there, is the athletic director, Pat Hayden, and you don't get rid of Lane Kiffin. This seems loco. You're going to lose a year in recruiting to your crosstown rival, Jim Mora. Why doesn't USC do that? Why don't they take the UCLA model, which was taken from the USC model, which is to say, go get an NFL head coach, bring him in there, and move on from this mess. Because Lane Kiffin, why would you, if you're an assistant coach anywhere, go to USC when you know Lane Kiffin's a lame duck? You take a job, you move your family to California for a year, and then Lane Kiffin, if he has a 7-5 year again, then he's going to get fired, and then now you're back looking for a job. It's a bad move by USC. It's not going to benefit them. The team that stands above all the rest right now would seem to be Stanford, but Oregon's going to be fine next year. At least there's a season or two before you drop off significantly.
They'll find another Chip Kelly out there, and he's probably already on their staff.
The big losers, Rank, and we've talked about it, and by the way, you can look at the new video, Check to the Future, when Rank and I jump into the near future. We go to next Monday this time around to divine who's going to win the two title games for you. We'll talk about those in more depth in just a second, like I say, but you can check that out. We talked about it there, but the big losers of all this, the Chicago Bears, Chicago in general must be saying, what? Wait, Chip Kelly was out the way? Why'd we hire the Canadian fella then? Whoa, undo it. Can we borrow the DeLorean, Sheck and Rank, and go back in the future, go back to the past and undo this mess? They don't want Mark Trestman. Chip Kelly was out there. What about the, why are they, if nothing else, they must be picking up the phone and saying, all right, Brian Kelly, how about it? Chip Kelly was only kidding around, it turns out. He did want the gig. How about you? Maybe you want to just move a little bit west here and come on up to Chicago, big leagues?
Especially after what happened with his star linebacker.
Oh, my. Manti Te'o, a keen transition there, Rank. Let's talk about the Manti Te'o lie. My goodness, this is bizarre. That's my reaction to it, like anybody else's. Actually, a percentage of people, as with any story under the sun, people's first reaction is to ascend to Mount Pius and start weighing in. How dare he? How dare Notre Dame? How dare the journalists? So on and so forth, covering this story, blah, blah, blah. But my question is, why? Why would a 21- or 22-year-old guy make a story? To what end? What is the what's the benefit of such a yarn?
He's like the modern-day Andy Kaufman. This is his Tony Clifton.
See, he's pulling a prank on us.
Yeah. It's kind of clever.
Oh, well,
no?
If he comes out and says that, then I shall laugh.
That would be my defense. That would, if I could counsel him, be like, dude, just say I'm a big fan of Andy Kaufman. He would have appreciated this. I think it's my Tony Clifton, and you know what? People would be forgiving.
I hope Teo's a listener to the podcast, because that is a great excuse. Or he could go the more serious angle of that same sort of thing. You know what? As a student here, as a student athlete at Notre Dame, I took a course on ethics and journalistic ethics, and I wanted to see who would take the bait, and you guys did, and shame on you for believing my story. And now I think that this really calls into the question your methodology, and I think you need to go back to square one, sports media. Goodbye.
It was a thesis.
That would be excellent.
It was a thesis for his doctorate.
That's the only way to go now, don't you see?
Well, that's a good idea. By the way, I feel both of these are solid ideas.
Chicago, I like your punked idea even better. It would be great if Ashton Kutcher jumped out of at the press conference, jumped out and like, ha, and high-five Teo. That would be a cool move, too.
He's a Midwest guy. He might go. Well, I think he's an Iowa guy.
But if he's willing to cross those lines, maybe that would be a good thing. If he has a PR guy, which he must have. Manti Te'o at this point must have a publicist. I hope you're listening. Get in touch and do this. What a cuckoo story. What's my reaction to it is why. I just can't imagine making this thing up. A furtive imagination, though. Good for you, Manti, at the very least on that. I don't know.
So I usually used to lie to get girls. I wouldn't lie and make up a girl.
Yeah, well, unless you're Anthony Michael Hall in Breakfast Club. She lives in the Niagara Falls area. She's from the Niagara Falls area.
That's right.
What would happen seriously if he had won the Heisman?
Von Leibowitz in the kill fire.
That's right. What would they do if he had won the Heisman Trophy? Would they? This is a weird thing. They can't strip him of it, right?
Maybe. I mean, they took it from Reggie Bush. All he did was provide a house for his family.
All right. Well, that's cheating. That's breaking the NCAA rules. This isn't a rules violation. It's just weird. It shows a pathological. I mean, it's more like John Lovitz's old Saturday Night Live character from 25 years ago, the pathological liar.
Oh, that's the ticket.
To what end? Yeah, that's the ticket. See? Why is he doing this? It's weird. It's, like I say, pathological.
That's,
but
that's another thing. He should reference Morgan Fairchild in his whatever his statement
a
is.
Bit. We're referencing
that's
a timely
John,
bit
yes.
out there, everybody listening. I hope you're as old as we are, so you know what we're talking about. Black tie.
Nobody
shaking
has
his
a
head
chance.
Behind.
He's so upset right now.
I got news for you. Black tie. Do you know who John Lovitz is?
Yes.
Who is
really?
He? Who is he? Tell me to give me some fundamental sort of detail about him.
He was the guy in. Come on, I'm trying to remember what movie he's in. He was the guy in.
Would you like to change your answer, Monty?
Can I tell you?
A League of Their Own.
Good for you. That's exactly. You know what? That's what I was looking for. John Lovitz was on SNL, but he was also in League of Their Own. And in fact, that's where at the end of every podcast I say it's been a thin slice of heaven. That's what he says to Gina Davis and her sister Laura Petty from.
In the Army now?
No, I was going for.
Point Break?
Point Break is what I was looking for.
All right, but speaking of...
All right!
Hold on. Speaking of
old... I want to know something else. Do you know who Morgan Fairchild is?
No.
She was a bosomy blonde actress from about 20 years ago.
Okay.
I think she's still around.
Speaking
of... You know who isn't around anymore, Rank? Mr. Drummond.
Yeah.
We lost Conrad Bain.
The Bain.
Yep. He's the one who brought in Arnold and Willis. Now he's gone. Hard to believe. Todd Bridges... right now like the prohibitive favorite to be the survivor. He's going to be the last man standing from Different Strokes.
Who's he up against? Charlotte Ray?
That's it. Mrs. Garrett. That's it. Mrs. Garrett is still around.
Right.
We've lost Bane now. We've lost Dana Plato. We lost
Arnold.
Know, what's his name? Arnold. What's his name? Little guy? Dick Coleman.
Gary Coleman.
Can't believe his name. So it's going to be Todd Bridges. It's going to end up the survivor. All right. Enough about that.
Enough about that.
Stop shaking your
head.
What?
We can't have a moment to recognize Conrad Bain, who was not only great in Different Strokes.
Bain, who did a great deed. He brought in those two little boys, orphaned little boys. He gave them a home, and a nice home at that, a penthouse on Park Avenue.
Speaking of old podcast bits, so this is a question from one of our listeners as well. Dennis Oddie. He asks, who in the history of the NBA?
Uh-huh.
Could be Dieter Brock.
All right, I'll answer that in just a moment. Let me finish about Manti Te'o and say one more thing about him.
You're still on Manti Te'o,
I have
aren't
a
you?
Legitimate question for Rank about this.
Okay.
All right, fine. speculative to say what the Heisman Committee might do. If he had won, I don't think there are any grounds to strip him of it, although that would be him showing up at future Heisman presentations next to Billy Sims yelling, doing his Boomer Sooner chant and all that sort of thing would be a little bit weird. Like, oh, yeah, you're the weird guy, which then begs this question for the near future. If you're an NFL team, what kind of red flag is this? Like, I don't care if he's there at the end of the first round, I'm not taking him. If he's there in the second round, are you not taking him? Is he somebody who you just pencil in as sort of like a, you know, hey, Vontaze Burfict didn't get drafted out of Arizona State, and 31 teams are now sorry they didn't take him because he was a character issue guy coming out of there. What kind of character issue is this? I don't know. Is there any equivalent in history for this? This is weird.
It is so bizarre, but the thing that was the most disturbing is the way he got run over by Alabama offensive players.
That's not going to help his draft position either.
That kind of hurts. This is just kind of the icing on the cake. I had made a joke to Daniel Jeremiah about him, and I said, oh, he reminds me of a modern-day Dana Howard, who was an obscure linebacker. He was a Buckus Award winner in the 90s. I think the St. Louis FC. No, did the Rams? Did the LA Rams draft him? No, I think it was St. Louis, whatever the years. It was in the 90s. So just an obscure guy who fell into the fifth round. I could see him falling pretty
You really
far
think people
yeah.
So his talent is – I mean, it's questioned now after the Alabama game – but if he's in the second round, at the end of the second round, you wouldn't take him base. At that point, obviously, skill-wise, he is worthy of a late second-round pick. But do you think teams are going to pass on him now?
Guys get passed on for weirder reasons,
I can't wait to hear what he comes up with as an explanation for this. All right. Now, Black Tie, you have a question from – you had that question from one of the listeners out there.
Dennis,
it's an interesting one. So who is the Dieter Brock of the NBA? Which is to say, if you haven't listened to the podcast before –
from Dennis Oddie, by the way.
Dennis Oddie.
Yep.
We, on the podcast, we talk about Dieter Brock. He's a guy who came into the Rams, a pretty complete team that went to the NFC title game, lost to the Bears in Soldier Field, that great Bears team. Dieter Brock was the QB. He was a longtime CFL QB for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, came in at the tail end of his career and took over. So by that definition, I guess I would say Arvydas Sabonis. Guy came in, had a nice career over in the Soviet, had high hopes coming out of school, or I mean out of whatever, when he was 18 or out of the Olympics. I don't even remember how you come out of the Soviet Union at that point. But so, yeah, oh, he couldn't get out. That's all. Yeah, it's the time when the Cold War is going on. So he can't get out of the Soviet Union. 7'2 guy, great 7'3 even, great passer, all that. But at the tail end of his career with bum knees, he finally gets to the NBA and looked pretty good.
Yeah, a lot of people contended that he would have been considered the best player in NBA history had he played his whole career in the NBA. And for a big man, for a 7-footer, passed the ball incredibly well, was good at the foul line, if I'm remembering that correctly. But that doesn't fit because Dieter Brock, there's been plenty of guys in the NFL who have given it one last chance who didn't really get an opportunity. This one was just because one that happened to me and a guy that caused me much pain and really ruined one of our chances, and that's why we bring him up. So for him to be the Dieter Brock of the NBA, it would have to be somebody who played for my teams.
I see.
And I don't know if the Lakers – the closest Laker equivalent I can think of would maybe be Karl Malone because he played in a minor league. He played for a team that nobody ever
won. He's not obscure enough, though. He's not
obscure. He was an NBA player. The CFL is where Dieter Brock came from. What about
Wang Zhuzhu. He was the first Chinese player.
Wang Zhuzhu. What about the guy who went to the Nets and then Milwaukee or vice versa? Yi.
He was the second Chinese player.
Yep. Yi was supposed to be great, and he was young, too.
He had a great workout against the cheer. That's where he got all his
About another MLB? An MLB guy would be Hideki Arabu.
Dieter Brock of Major League Baseball's Rex Hudler.
Oh, really? He was in Japan.
Yeah, but Dieter Brock was an American, and I know we made this – you make that connection that he's a Canadian, but when he came on the show, he has the southern draw because he's from Alabama. You forget he's an American who had to go away and then come back. So you would have to think of somebody who spent the prime of their career someplace
Hudler's
else.
Hudler's good, but Arabu's the one because he comes in to a good
here.
Team.
But he's not from here.
I follow.
He
All
didn't
right.
go away and come back.
Next question, Black Tie. Oh, one other thing. I do know you can spare me if you're from north of the border. First of all, I love Canada, the parts of Canada I've been to. I love. You don't have to let me know that Mark Trestman is American, not Canadian, and that the CFL is a legitimate league. I know. Lighten up. All right, so people on Twitter have already hit me up on that. On that count. I know. I like to make glib remarks. Sometimes I'm not being 100% sincere with my cracks on the Twitter. Just so you know. By the way, speaking of that Chicago thing, here's a parallel to the early 90s. Just as Mark Trestman, they must be saying, what? We didn't know that we could have had Chip Kelly. Now can we undo this? Same thing. They put Comiskey Park up. I forget what year that was, probably 93-ish or so, Comiskey.
Early 90s.
New Comiskey opens up. Same year, I think, Camden Yards in Baltimore opens up, and it becomes immediately this paradigm-shifting thing. All of a sudden, people are like, oh, retro stadiums are all the rage, and people flooding from all around the region to go see a game in Camden Yards and watch the Orioles, and the White Sox must have been like, whoa. We didn't know. Nobody told us that retro ballparks were an option. We didn't know. We just built a new ballpark. Same thing. And isn't it interesting? Double whammy. The irony or coincidence, I guess, that the Comiskey is not too far from Soldier Field, where Mark Trestman will be doing his coaching in 2013.
Comiskey, it says, opened in 91.
Hmm.
And I'm pretty sure
Camden
was a little because Camden
in that range,
both,
92, 93.
They're both HOKs.
What, the design?
I think it's the architecture. Architecture.
You're having some trouble with a couple of words here today. You wear it
I'm
on your
doing
sleeve.
So, well.
So what? You know what, Rank? Warts and all. We don't care. Hey, Black Tie, next question.
All right, guys, next question.
Who's the biggest liar, by the way? So who is the worst? Lance Armstrong, Manti Te'o? Or Brian Kelly. Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly, I'm not trying to condemn him as but in general, the notion of being, in a way, can't you make a case that the most damaging lie of them all is Brian Kelly or Chip Kelly, or any college coach who does this, who gets 18-year-old kids to commit basically their lives, here's what their lives are supposed to be based on your promise to coach them and make them better human beings and prepare them for adulthood and all that jazz. And then they dump off to go to chase their NFL dreams or a better college gig. Or is it Manti Te'o, who I don't know who he's exactly hurt here except himself, and Lance Armstrong? Let's keep in mind, $500 million raised with that organization. It is an interesting moral and ethical conundrum that it raises that I'm not the first one to mention it, but I do think there's something to be said for, he lied, first of all, about a sport no one cares about, at least in this country, nobody ever cared about. He made millions of dollars himself. But the upshot is, $500 million for cancer research, right? Now, he's a creepo because in the ensuing years, he berated people, he sued people, and he ruined those lives of the people who he sued for charging him with this thing, which he's now admitted. It'll be interesting to see if there's some sort of legal action to retrieve that money for his lies. Rank, worst lie.
I'm not too worked up about any of them. The Te'o one, like I was saying before, doesn't really – that's got to be the worst. This whole –
It's the weirdest lie I've heard.
But part of me also thinks, he let it – at what point can you come out and be like, oh, wait, I had made that up. It had been a and some people, at what point – sorry about that. It's like a sitcom.
People are talking about it. Maybe you don't want to talk too much about it. We're having trouble. We're having some trouble. She died. that's what you do for future reference. If you have a made-up girlfriend, she must pass away.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good note. That's another good note for kids out there if you're making stuff up.
And Chip Kelly too. I believe that he meant it at the time that he wasn't going to go to the NFL when he decided to go back to Oregon. We don't know. We might find out in the next couple of weeks that Oregon is going to get put on probation. That Philadelphia made an offer he couldn't refuse. But I believe at the time he decided, you know what, I just want to stay in Oregon.
Well, I'll tell you this, too, and I don't want to get up on Mount Pius, but I have heard a lot of media people getting up on Mount Pius about Lance Armstrong. And I find it a double standard because a lot of the people, a lot of those, you know, the news about Chip Kelly breaks. And it seemed for a moment there Chris Mortensen had broken the story, and then Jay Glazer had broken the story. And so who knew who broke the story first? And this is a big neck-and-neck competition among the Jeff Darlingtons here at the NFL and Glazer and Mortensen and so on and Schefter and all these guys. But it doesn't matter to any of us. We're sports fans. We couldn't care less which one of those guys breaks the story. Just tell us the news. What is more damaging, potentially, are the opinion guys who now are also engaged in a heated battle to see who can come up with the most outrageous opinion, the most ridiculous thing to say, the most contrarian opinion on any subject. And it's phony because they're not trying to say something sincere. They're trying to say something that's going to get them attention. So in a way, maybe a little bit of a stretch, but much in the same way Lance Armstrong juiced to be better in his profession or to win in his profession. Can't you charge some of those media people, and I'm talking about the Cowherds of the world who've gone on the radio and some thinly veiled racial charges against John Wall. Look it up, Google it, and you'll find those stories.
John Wall and his dancing? Is that what you're...
It was for dancing. Mm-hmm. He did the Dougie dance, and he said he's a me guy because he didn't grow up in a home with a father. And, you know, it basically, you know, plays as racist. And same goes for Rob Parker and his comments about RG3, and he got fired for it. Skip Bayless on that hokey show. This culture that exists across the country in that small Connecticut town in particular, but other places, but certainly the spotlight is on that place. There clearly is a culture there, which is say something outrageous. Don't just analyze. Say something crazy because it gets us attention for doing it. When you open up that can of worms, you get victims like Rob Parker. I don't mean to say he's a victim, but of course, I'm sure he was poked a little bit. Yeah, go ahead. Say some crazy stuff. If you're going to be on one of our shows that does this opinion stuff, say something wild. You'll get more attention for it. Look how it's benefited Skip Bayless and so on. Sometimes guys are going to go by the wayside with that sort of stuff. But to the point I'm making, trying to make at least, is aren't those guys bad? Aren't they doing the same thing? They're using artificial means, which is not a sincere opinion, to get more attention and further their career. Rank, how say you?
That's what everybody's doing on Twitter. Like, I was, when this thing came out with the, when the Tao story came out, I'm like, I cannot wait for the first person to make the reference to Lance Armstrong. Like, hey, Lance Armstrong, guess what? You're bumped off the news now. And then this should probably be an indication of the people I'm following and probably shouldn't be following. Then you just, periodically, every 10 to 15 minutes, there comes that joke recycled over and over again like it's a bad open mic. And it just, yeah, everybody's just trying to race out and just think, like, I don't think anybody wants to go out and say, here's my sincere opinion on this. They want to come out and say, you know what? I think this will attract the most attention. This will make me stand out if I say something like this.
Of course that's the case.
And it disturbs. Yeah, it's just it's kind of a bummer because I find it.
I'm up on Mount Pius with it. I find that sort of disingenuous opinion making. I've been told directly by Cowherd. I don't believe a lot of the stuff I say. I'm taking a contrary point of view because I know I'll get attention for it. That is, and in fact, that is sold beyond him. Hey, do it the way he does it. By program directors, there people have said, do that sort of thing. Look, he does it just because he knows it's the most interesting opinion to take. Well, philosophically, I don't want to go on the air and make stuff up. I mean, I understand there's a little bit of a line. You might not understand the vagaries between just bald insincerity and the sarcasm and the satire that maybe I approach things with. I'm not trying to give myself a pass, but clearly I'm kidding around. Those aren't passed off. They're said unironically. They're just not sincere opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Savvy?
I'm with you.
All right. So we've condemned We've condemned everybody. The only good people in the world are you and me.
Yep. I don't want to have to write a storyboard of my opinions and then come back later and be like, wait, which side was I on in this Tebow thing?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
Am I pro Tebow? Like, yeah. I have to. Yeah, that's
that
garbage.
Bag of lies. Once you start going down that path, how do you have an opinion on anything? Every day you just. And by the way, Here's a little secret.
That's how you end up with a dead girlfriend on Twitter.
By the way, this thing of this opinion making, hey, got to have an opinion. Guess what? There are only two sides to take on any story. Hey, do you agree with Lance Armstrong, or do you think he's not such a bad guy, or do you think he is a bad guy? That's pretty much the way to go. If your goal is, hey, say the thing that's the contrary opinion, just wait, hear what everybody says for a half an hour, and then go against it. All right. AFC title game. How say you?
I'm going to go with the Patriots.
Ah, you've changed.
I was leaning towards the Ravens. I went back and forth, but it's one of those things, whatever my initial gut said, I wasn't going to overthink it. I almost overthought myself into taking the Texans last week, but I did not. So I'm going to stick with the Patriots because that's just the gut feeling right after the game.
Well, listen, we had Brendan Ayabendejo on, and he was a good fella and everything on the show. He seemed like a nice guy, but I'll tell you, it seems to me the track record among teams talking trash about the Patriots before a game is not a good idea. They seem to know how to use that. Witness the letter jackets of the Houston Texans. Not proper trash talking, but still, they don't seem to vibe to that. The Patriots know how to use that. I've gotten a fair amount of tweets and stuff when I say things like that an athlete's going to be able to use that. I wrongly predicted Aaron Rodgers would be inspired by playing the 49ers, going back there. He wanted to be a 49er. He wanted to stick it to him. He did not, of course. It was the Colin Kaepernick show. But for the most part, and people say, see, it doesn't matter. It just has to do with who's better physically. Tell that to Michael Jordan, then. Michael Jordan, how many stories have we heard? He knows how to use every slight, every perceived slight to burn another team. Talk about that to every coach in the last 30 years who goes into his locker room and uses that phony, no one outside this locker room believes in you kind of rhetoric to inspire his team. Yeah, I think it does matter. You know, we hear those stories over and over and over again. So I do think that the Patriots will be able to use that to their advantage more practically. The Ravens have taken way too many snaps. They took a ton of snaps against the Colts. Obviously, double overtime against the Broncos in bad conditions, too. Don't sleep on the fact that it was frigid, so their bodies are extra fatigued from that. And look at who they're about to play, the team that is running that hurry-up offense like nobody's business. I know a lot of teams do it, but they're really doing it with great precision, getting the ball up. The Texans were barely in a three-point stance when the ball was getting snapped against them on certain occasions last week. I think that'll happen again to the Ravens. I think also the ray of hope for the Flaccos is this. They don't get a great pass rush, the Patriots. And so what the one thing Flacco does is throw the deep ball. And maybe he can hit a couple of deep balls over the course of the game. Maybe they can grind it with Ray Rice. End of the day, I'll go with the Patriots, though. Unfinished business. And I think they probably know the window's closing a little bit. Tom Brady's 35, after all. I'm going to take the Patriots at home, redo San Francisco at Atlanta. Rank, how say you? Who will your Patriots be playing?
San Francisco. I don't think there's any doubt. Atlanta, I know. We talked about this on the show earlier this week. Matt Ryan did make a step. He did show something that I didn't know that he had in him. He was able to rally his team in 30 seconds, no less, and was able to take that step and get that monkey off his back, so to speak, and to get his team to the NFC Championship game. But the 49ers look too good. The defense is good. Colin Kaepernick seems unstoppable. They're gonna run away with it.
I get it, and everybody has weighed in at me already. The fallout of me then touting Colin Kaepernick's. People get this is the media cycle is the way these things go. Is you watch Colin Kaepernick, I'm blown away. I can't believe what I just saw. Is the immediate reaction? I'm in on that train. Then people cynically have to rise up and say, well, it's only one game. Let's see him do it again. The Seahawks took care of him. And by the way, that option kind of that running quarterback will not make it long term. All right. In the meantime, though, if San Francisco gets to a Super Bowl, better yet, wins a Super Bowl with a running quarterback, I bet you they'd be willing to go back and trade that second round draft pick for a Super Bowl crown. You know, if Colin Kaepernick flames out like Mark the Bird Fidrich in 2013, so what? If he wins a Super Bowl for him, I don't think they'll mind that switch. I agree with you that I agree with the people who say, hey, listen, he can't do it against every defense. The Seahawks are a defense that can stop him. Atlanta ain't the Seahawks defensively. Mm-hmm. I think on that fast track, I think Colin Kaepernick's going to be able to take care of business.
And we saw what happened in the second half to the Falcons when Russell Wilson was able to take over that game and really move the ball on him. Colin Kaepernick will do the same thing. And I don't want to get too overhyped with Colin Kaepernick because I do think the Packers need to upgrade on defense, especially at speed. They just need more team speed, get rid of some of those older guys. But I just I see the Falcons cutting just being very similar to the way the Packers play defense with some older
guys. Here's why the Falcons jumped out to an early lead against Seattle is because they were surprisingly able to run the ball with Michael Turner. Michael Turner, by the way, seeing him in person, completely anecdotal, I know, but when you see Marshawn Lynch in person, it's striking what a big fella he is. He seems like one of the biggest guys on the Seahawks. He is a mountain of a man for a running back. He's a monster. Michael Turner, also big, but not exactly in the right way. He's got a big tuchus. He's got a big bubble bum. He's a heavy-set guy. I don't know why I feel obliged to bring that up. That has nothing to do with anything other than that's just what I thought. Like, wow, that's an NFL running back? Look a little heavy-set there, fella. But anyway, he hasn't been great game in and game out. He did make some hay early in that game. That opened things up for the Falcons. That's how they jumped out to the lead. As I say, they're not going to do that against the Niners. The Niners will learn from the failures of the Seahawks. That's not going to happen again. If you put it on Matt Ryan to beat the 49ers defense, I'll take the Niners in that one over the course of 60 minutes. I say it's the Niners, and like you and I talked about on Check to the Future, again at NFL.com for your review, we'll tell you what's going to go down in these two games. I guess we're kind of doing that already right now. However, it's interesting what it sets up. The last Super Bowl in New Orleans, Rank, 11, 12 years ago, Tom Brady, second year, takes over for Drew Bledsoe in the middle of the year, takes his team all the way, improbably, to the Super Bowl, beats a prohibitive favorite in the St. Louis Rams, and now the exact same thing, except reverse, could happen to Tom Brady. Now, he is the wily vet. He is the guy who is on the team that is probably going to be favored to win. Kaepernick, the second-year guy, taking over midseason for Alex Smith. It's an interesting completion of that circle. The only caveat I would give is I don't know if the Patriots would be favored to win that game. The Niners smoked them in Foxborough, so maybe I'm assuming too much. Either way, it's a neat little parallel, yes?
It is.
All right, fine. You don't seem as impressed by it as I am.
If Black the Patriots time. Would end up being, as you Wrap said, prohibitive favorites, then yes, it would make a lot more sense. But after the...
Still neat that Tom Brady, the tail end of his career, he wins his first Super Bowl. He could win his last.
He's passing the torch.
Could be.
Like
could
Andre be. The Giant to Hulk Hogan in WrestleMania 3.
One thing's for sure. That is the best result that is out there right now. Because if we get the Harbaughs, that's going to be a long fortnight.
That'll be fine.
The Harbaugh family tree. I don't need to hear about the Harbaugh boys for two weeks.
That would be background to the Ray Lewis tour one last time. Like that would Ray Lewis. I think Ray Lewis is being in the Super Bowl last game is the key story. And
I suppose that might be.
We will get tired of it, though. I agree totally.
You know what? Here's another quick, interesting one. Is if you would have the Falcons play the Ravens in the Super Bowl, it would guarantee that for only the second time in NFL history that a bird mascot is going to win the Super Bowl. The
I
only
knew
time
you were going to do
well,
that.
Well, it's true. Baltimore Ravens, only bird mascot to ever win it. There's a pox on bird. They don't. The football gods don't approve of poultry and such. They don't like winged beasts representing their sport. Apparently, maybe Chip Kelly will change that. It's nice. It's nice and neat too. By the way, as a side note, that they can now that their green Oregon jerseys with the wings on them kind of translate nice. It's an easy switch for him over to Philadelphia. Somebody did tweet me wisely. They tweeted the uniform monitor and mentioned
they did
that they should.
I must have missed this.
No, I'm the uniform monitor. I know you'd like to think you try to pull a coup.
I didn't pull a coup.
It was laughed. It was laughed at. That's what I did. I scoffed at it. Is what I did.
As you were sent to exile in Elba.
And I think this is the perfect opportunity, as someone mentioned on the Twitter, they should go back to their Kelly green uniforms that they wore in 1960. Chip Kelly, see? Works perfectly. Well done.
I agree with that.
Good.
As a uniform monitor.
Your vote hardly matters, but your support is nice. That being said. All right, listen. So we're now all set for the title games. Go back and listen to episode 122 if you wish. Nay, I encourage you, demand that you go back and do it. I think you'll enjoy that one. And we'll be back after the title games and get you all set before Rank, you and me depart for New Orleans. Black Tie, let's get someone in here who can tell us about New Orleans. Get us Drew Brees or Archie Manning or somebody like that. We need to talk about what to do in New Orleans. We're not going to be working 24 hours a day. We want to find the best restaurants, and maybe they could grease the skids for us. All right, well, listen. So, on behalf of Teo and Kelly and Armstrong and you good people out there who tweeted the show, we appreciate the tweets. We'll be back with more Hooey and Applesauce later on. But in the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.
Day. Oh, damn a shack.
Though Dave didn't mention us, the podcast is not over. We are still here. Welcome back to another edition of the ATL Debate Club. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a man who practically invented the "my girlfriend is dead" excuse, Mark Sessler.
Well, if dead, one thing, but I've often, you know, in my youth, rolled with women who barely didn't exist in terms of knowing me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What age range are we talking?
Oh, I'm talking youth. Like, you know, when you are thinking, I'm in with this person.
Yeah.
But you're not living in an adult headspace. You have no chance with this person.
Yeah, girls didn't really like me in high school. Are you talking about high school? Did you have girlfriends in high school?
On the edge of... No, yes, I did, yes.
Wow, yep. You were one of those guys, huh?
I wasn't one of
big
those
jock,
guys.
Big football hero.
I made a way for myself. I was not a big football hero, though.
Yeah.
I used other inroads.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. That's good. Well, we could talk about that off air. You just opened up a whole like new way of me looking at you. Is this man that was just like rolling deep with girlfriends throughout his formative years?
Also, probably incorrect, but again, some progress was made.
All right, I want to start this week. I was waiting because I thought it was a little odd that you haven't thanked me.
For what? There's so many things I could thank you for.
Last week, I offered you the opportunity of a lifetime as a football fan. On the podcast, I offered you the chance, a statement to Browns owner Jimmy Haslam, sharing your feelings about the franchise, what needs to be done in the wake of the Chip Kelly misfire.
That's right.
There was a large, 8-foot-tall, shadowy league figure behind us, disfigured face. I told you that I was going to have him deliver that monologue via microchip straight to Haslam. Not 24 hours later, you have a head coach, Chud, former Browns fan, ate dog biscuits, which is something your culture does. Tell me why you haven't thanked me, and tell me that that is not proof that I was able to get that microchip to Jimmy Haslam.
You did something effective because, you know, Thursdays are... The night I have Fridays off, I go home on Thursday, I decompress.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of this, hours after I had made this, you know, plea to Haslam, they hired Chud.
Right.
So it was effective, and I do thank you, Dan. And you know what? I'm happy with it. I don't want Chip Kelly. It's like a guy that doesn't want us.
Right.
Chud wants us. Now,
he was clearly playing you, it sounds like, Chip.
We got played. Well, I mean, I think the whole league got played, but I'm happy with our guy. Happy till September. That's what it is when the Browns hire a new coach every other year.
Right.
You're very happy. Then the games begin, and there's some issues. But you know what? Let's keep an optimistic outlook.
I actually did a Google search to get the correct spelling of his name recently, and it brought up several Browns fan sites. And the number one headline is Chud's No Dud. So that's cool.
You got a lot of good... A lot of young journalists and good headline writers, possibly better than myself on that front.
All right, what else are we talking about today?
Well, I think we're going to touch base with our boss, Greg Rosenthal.
Oh, we should. Yeah. We should do that.
Should we just call him Raw?
Let's call him Raw. Let's catch him off guard.
He's in New York right now. I know he's told me that he's in a suit and tie because he's got a laundry list of like important office meetings in the league headquarters.
I've never seen him in a suit. I wish we could see this. Do we have teleconference abilities?
No, but I mean, you know, it helps visually just to imagine.
Yeah, no, it just sounds like we really need to call him now.
You know, I was driving to work yesterday, real quick.
Yeah.
I have about a 2-minute drive from my house to the NFL headquarters here in Culver City. He's on the radio talking to Fox Sports while I'm driving.
He's everywhere. He was listening to you from the radio as well.
He's now going to be here.
All right, let's bring him on the line. Bryce behind the glass is going to get it done. Who knows if he picks up? Could be in one of those high-powered meetings right now.
You.
Greg Rosenthal.
Hey.
Couple of your employees here.
Are we on?
We are on.
We are on. We like the cold call because it just makes the whole process seem perhaps more lively.
Well, I always wonder when, like, Bill Simmons calls his buddies whether they know he's calling. It seems a little canned, but this was genuine.
Oh, yeah, like when he calls, what's his name, Complex John? Litigations, John?
Right.
That can't, yeah, I always thought the same thing. There's no way that guy is able to just roll straight into, you know, Red Sox talk or whatever when.
But I just did it, so maybe it's
it is possible.
Maybe.
Where are you?
No hoaxes here. I'm in the league offices today.
We heard you're wearing a suit.
I am, yeah. Well, you have to. You have to wear a suit every day you're here. That's why I never come in.
So, you know, we wanted to chat with you about a couple things, but I think we've got, obviously, two massive games this weekend. Couldn't get any bigger. You know, we talked to you on the phone the other week about Super Bowl planning, and I just want to ask you something because you sounded, you know, I guess subconsciously convinced that the Patriots were headed for the Super Bowl. How do you feel about this game? You mentioned a couple times that when we were at the Super Bowl and we were talking to various coaches, that one of them would be Belichick. You just kept mentioning over and over, it's going to be Belichick. What's the deal there?
Well, you know, they're favorites. They're home. They're playing a team they're familiar with. I'm not that confident that the Patriots are going to win, but I like their chances. I like their chances more than the Ravens, but I like the if I was going to pick one team to pull an upset this weekend, I would take the Ravens over the Falcons, and I guess the Falcons, you know, are technically an upset. So I'm not overly confident, but I think the Patriots are playing at a high level right now.
Now, do you think the Ravens obviously very nearly, you know, pulled off the upset last January in the same game? What's different if you think the Ravens could pull this off? What makes the Ravens better where they actually could finish a deal? Is it something as simple as Justin Tucker, or do you see something else involved here that's making them more dangerous this year?
No, I don't think they're a better team this year. I think they're a worse team this year. Their defense is not as dangerous as it was a year ago. Joe Flacco is hitting some big plays right now. They're a veteran team that's been around, and that's why I think they were able to kind of turn it on here at the end and outplay Denver. And Denver, they're playing well, and they're not afraid of the Patriots. They've beaten the Patriots in Foxborough in the playoffs. They beat the Patriots earlier this season in a great game. They can throw the ball deep, which I think you need to beat the Patriots. But whereas I think the Ravens are a little worse than they were a year ago, I think the Patriots are better. I think this is the best Patriots team since 07 and maybe since 04.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens seem focused much more so than later in the season. One guy who doesn't seem focused to me, though, is, Dan, I don't know if you saw this story this morning, Boston's mayor got up on the podium again, and Greg actually did this post. It's a funny post. And he was, you know, opining on the Patriots' chances and their glories, and he called Vince Wilcock, and then proceeded to, you know, talk about Gronkowski as gonk. And it kind of spread through our newsroom. But what's the – Greg,
this
why is this
– I know.
Why is this guy allowed to continue to speak publicly about the Patriots?
Well, and he had notes in front of him at the time. I'm starting to wonder if it's like some elaborate prank on us that he's doing this on purpose, because it's happened before. I mean, he said at one victory party that Veritech split the uprights instead of Vinatieri. He's botched some other names. He's botched the Celtics' names. And it's just like, of all the towns, to have a mayor that has no respect for professional sports, no knowledge, obviously, you know, I'm amazed Boston keeps reelecting this guy.
Doesn't that speak to a much greater concern in terms of the civic nature of what's going on in Boston, that you have a man that might – it sounds like he's almost – I don't know, there's something going wrong with his brain to call Gronk gonk. Gronkowski is one of the most famous football players in America, let alone New England.
Right. And, well, I also think it speaks to the second-class status the Patriots have in Boston. You know, Patriots fans get on me all the time about this. It's a Red Sox town. It's not, you know, I don't know if they would have so much disrespect for the Red Sox that he clearly does for the Patriots.
Real quickly, I do want to know your thoughts also on the NFC game.
Well, I think the Falcons lucked out last week I think the fact that they blew that game in the fourth quarter is almost overlooked a little bit because they ended up winning the game, and they deserve credit for making those two plays to get it. But if things turn out just a little bit differently on that final drive for Seattle, they don't have time to do it, and we're talking about one of the worst chokes in playoff history.
Right.
To me, I just don't think they don't have a pass rush. They don't really do anything defensively that makes you think they're going to hold San Francisco under 35 points. And I don't know if they can win a game like that.
I said on the Damashek podcast earlier this week, my ultimate fear is that somehow, because I think the Niners are the better team too, I think they'll win. But my ultimate fear is that Atlanta has a good day or the ball bounces their way. They sneak past the Niners, and then we're long overdue for a Super Bowl where it's, you know, Patriots 55, Falcons 17, where, you know, the place is dead by the second quarter. That's my ultimate fear.
Well, those crowds are always kind of dead anyways, which is one of the annoying things about the Super Bowl. Yeah, that would be bad, but I don't know. They could throw the ball deep. You know, the one thing that the 49ers have been doing a good job, and the Falcons do a good job, is they can throw the ball vertically. And, like, you know, Matt Ryan, if nothing else, was very aggressive going deep. I mean, he played a good game. I don't really worry about their offense too much. It's just that, I mean, when you watched that game last week, Russell Wilson, it was outrageous how much time he had to throw the football. I mean, there were times when he was back there for 5-10 seconds. The Falcons have no pass rush. The only time that they stopped the Seahawks was really when the Seahawks stopped themselves in the first half. Otherwise, they would have put up 6-7 touchdowns.
Yeah. Well, let me also ask you, we're going to be in New Orleans in 2 weeks. Not the whole team, but you, me and Mark will all be at New Orleans. You went to Tulane. You are, we know you're going a little ghost protocol after the game, disappearing in the streets of New Orleans. Should we be worried about that?
Well, I don't know about after the game. More like the next week I'm going to go underground and just stay there. We're going to have to do a lot of writing after the game there.
Yes.
But, yeah, this is a home game. I couldn't be more excited. No lie. I mean, I've been waiting for this for 5 years. This is pretty much going to be the highlight of my career. And then the next week, once I, you know, get drunk and lose my daughter, and pretty much I think that's where my career downfall is going to start, is right after. Well,
Mark and I are going to be in the NFL charter that soars back to L.A. on Monday morning, and you will be in our thoughts. We just want to see you again.
Are you concerned about bringing a child to New Orleans?
No, she's,
like, what is she going to do, go to the bar?
I don't know. No, just, it seems like an ornery environment.
Well, the drinking age was 18 when I first got down there. I mean, it's still really 18 to get into the bar, so she could probably get in. They really wouldn't mind. No, she's cool. She'll love New Orleans.
Well, people that don't know your daughter, and that's a lot of people on the planet, it almost sounds like she's 17, but isn't she like 2?
No, yeah. She's 16 months right now.
So. Okay.
Yeah, Greg, you know, because our podcast is only like 9 minutes long, we've got to cut this short. But I'll chat with you on IM probably in about 5 minutes.
All right. I got good stories for you to write up.
Oh, no.
All right. Thank you.
So that's what you have to look forward to after we depart. You go back to – this is my off day.
Right.
I go into, as you would say, the wilderness and enjoy Los Angeles.
I don't know
and
where
all
you
its
go.
Pleasures.
Yeah.
You go downstairs – and crank out some more news and analysis.
Yeah,
on
for like three more hours. Then I'm into my weekend, and you're back. And Dan and I, we fight about this all the time. Is it fighting or is it just?
It's fighting.
My week is ending today. Yours is beginning.
Yes, my off days are Wednesday
and
Thursday.
This is your depressing Sunday.
Yeah, well, that's the way life is. Now, one thing we didn't get to with Greg, but we want to talk about is Ray Lewis. I personally cannot. The Ray Lewis retirement extravaganza cannot end soon enough for me. And that is not – and you agree, I know. And that is not a popular sentiment around the country or even within the walls of this office. I mean, what's the deal? Why do
it's like you're not allowed – I think actually a lot of people feel this way, but you're not allowed to say it.
Right.
I'm not sure. It took on almost like a dynamic where the way you can't speak about our military, you can't speak about other – certain things in our country, Ray Lewis has become one of these pristine scenarios where it's like we're not allowed to critique the fact that I don't want to deal with Ray Lewis for 2 weeks in a run-up to the Super Bowl.
They actually changed that old cliche. You now, in public settings and parties, you don't talk about religion, politics, and Ray Lewis.
Right. Well, it's right. I feel the thing is he's been playing for so long that you got a lot of younger people that love Ray Lewis, that only see him as what he's been over the last 8 years. And we're not here to completely tear the guy down. It's just that I think there's some an exhaustion level surrounding Lewis, probably especially for some of the media, and even these teams.
In the last 2 weeks, you know, I understood when Reggie Wayne came out 2 weeks ago and said he was, you know, he felt it was disrespectful that Lewis danced on the middle of the field after the last play of regulation in that loss, the Colts season-ending loss to the Ravens.
Right.
I also, you know, this guy, as soon as that classic double overtime game ends against the Broncos, Lewis drops to his knees and is pounding the turf. And it's almost like you could, like, imagine him, like, peeking his head up with one eye open, hoping to make sure there are cameras around. I mean, I just feel like that's what he's less a football player and more Ray Lewis, almost like a movie character.
Yeah, it's changed. And, like, there was, you know, yesterday was Championship Wednesday where they roll all four teams out for press conferences. You conveniently missed this.
Yes.
But so, you know, they asked Joe Flacco, who, talk about a guy that can't win no matter what he does. He gets up there, and it's like he's come off what is arguably the most career-defining game he's had. I mean, a marvelous performance against the Broncos. And all they're asking him is one Ray Lewis question after the other. And someone said, oh, is he out on the field? Is it Ray Lewis that's willing the Ravens to win? And I like Flacco because he's sort of a no-nonsense dude. And he's been harassed from such an early state that he's just like, no. He's like, listen, when we're out there, he's like, I guess I'm supposed to tell you that's the way it is, but play to play, we're out there to win matchups. He's like, we're not thinking about Ray Lewis.
Right. Well, you know what? The other thing with Flacco is this, and it's interesting to me. It's like, you know, it's still this idea that the Ravens, the defense of the Ravens, Terrell Suggs and Ray Lewis and Helody and all this stuff. You know, Terrell Suggs is playing on one leg and one arm. Lewis, you know, he just right now, seconds ago, was credited with another tackle. He's now been credited with 300 tackles in the playoffs by the people upstairs that measure such things. This is Joe Flacco, in case you haven't noticed, is leading this team now. And if I'm him, I'm a little sick of it. This year, he's being asked about Ray Lewis constantly. Last year, it was, you know, Terrell Suggs saying, oh, we're ugly. Our quarterback's ugly. We win ugly. And, like, Joe Flacco's probably like, I'm not ugly. Why, you know?
I think it's just, I think, you know, I look at, like, London Fletcher, for instance, and we were talking about this a little bit before. Lewis has 227 starts. Fletcher, 224. They both won Super Bowls. Fletcher hasn't missed a game since 1998. You never hear about this
guy. And still playing at a high level.
Still playing at a high level. You never hear about this guy. And Lewis also is, he's been an extraordinary player. We're not knocking the guy's career necessarily, but it's like one guy is a complete ghost. The other guy, you cannot turn on a television without hearing him espousing his views and just sort of, you know, preaching at us constantly.
Right. Well, and hopefully.
Are we grumpy?
We're very grumpy, and we're also indirectly rooting for Bill Belichick's team on Sunday. So let's just get out of this. Before we go, I just want to talk about one last thing.
Yeah.
Our friend, Robert Griffin III, not really our friend, but on Twitter, he sent out a tweet yesterday, which was something along the lines of, saw the new Haunted House movie. It was, you know, hilarious. Marlon Wayans, you did it again. It was something like that. And I was a little disappointed because I'm not a fan of the Wayans Brothers spoof movies.
Right. Did what again?
Exactly. You know, and I do love spoof movies. I love Naked Gun with Leslie Nielsen is one of my favorite movies ever in terms of comedies. But I don't think the Wayans brothers have cornered this market that they're so, you know, they're so insistent on spoofing any popular movie. It just kind of, it disappointed me that Robert Griffin III, a very smart, intelligent guy, would not have better taste in comedies.
Not fair.
So I just, all I did, I retweeted it and then put in front of it, sigh, okay? Sigh, period.
Yeah.
Okay. A little bit smarmy in retrospect.
Possibly.
But at the same time, it was just, I like RG3. I hoped he would have liked Leslie Nielsen movies over Marlon Wayans movies. Hours later, I get a tweet from Marlon Wayans.
Really?
Yes. And, you know, listen, he replied to me with a highly inappropriate request involving an email and his anatomy. And I can't go any further than that. Okay? And if you really want to find out and you're, you know, of age, you should, because it's out there on the Twitter. But, you know, I didn't reply because, listen, did you see this? And am I supposed to reply to this?
I'm going to go look at it.
Oh, you have okay. You haven't
I'm
seen it.
Go look at it.
Yeah. So I don't know. Listen, that's where we're going to be. That's where we're at right now.
You're rolling with filmmakers. possibly average filmmakers.
Yeah, you could put it that way. That's it for another edition of ATL Debate Club. Mark, are you ready for championship weekend?
Oh, I'm excited for it, Dan. How did it sound like a stock answer? Yes, I'm excited for it. I'm genuine. I can't wait.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week to discuss the Super Bowl.
See you then.
Later.